everyone, and welcome to Taste of True Crime Podcast. I'm Abby.
I'm Sam.
And we are back for part two of the, Jennings 8, Jeff Davis 8. It's been a minute again, but I will say that it's not our fault entirely. We're going to go on ahead and blame COVID-19. We recorded part one, 2 days before shit hit the fan, I think it was. And we ended up starting working from home and, you know, trying to get everything together with our kids and doing the school stuff from home. And it just kind of
escalated from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what took so long. In the last episode, we covered the first three victims of the Jennings 8 or Jeff Davis 8. But first, we're going to go into our disclaimers. And I remembered this time.
I like how you have it all.
Have it all in
picture perfect in a row.
Yeah, let's see how long that lasts.
You got this.
So, we do a few disclaimers for every episode. This is a laid-back discussion podcast. We do our research, but, you know, we're not as, serious. I don't want to say serious because we're serious about the crime, but, you know, we talk a lot of shit and go back and forth.
We have our own opinions.
Yes.
We're allowed to have those.
So we're a little bit more laid back than your Forensic Files podcast. We apologize if we pronounce something wrong, say something incorrectly, and it will happen in this episode again, like it did the last episode, just because these names are unfamiliar to us, but we do the best we can. Feel free to email us with your corrections. We'll check them out, look at them, maybe use them in the next time. I don't know.
Maybe read them correctly.
So, like we were saying, we joke around a lot. It's in our nature. We don't want anybody to mistake that for us, you know, downplaying the crime, laughing at the victims, et cetera, et cetera. That's just who we are. So, that's that. You can like it or not. So, that's how this is going to go today.
That's how that's rolling.
So we are on part two, and it's still weird to say because this is still our first more than one part, you know, case that we've done. So, sorry y'all, I had to take
insert,
a sip of my drink.
Insert
gulp. All right. So, we are covering the Jeff Davis 8 or the Jennings 8. This occurred in Jennings, Louisiana, also known as Jefferson Davis Parish. These crimes were committed 2005 through 2009. And like I said earlier, we covered the first three victims, Loretta Lewis, Ernestine Patterson, Kristen Lopez. And this is more than one part because, I mean, there's so many victims and so many scenarios and things that happen that are we feel like are important to kind of get the whole picture. We want to make sure that we're not leaving anything out, missing anything, and trying to do the best we can with the research part of it. So that's why it's so many parts. And I will tell y'all there will be a part three. Tell y'all right now.
And it won't be 12 weeks from now.
Promise.
Or 8. However you, count.
Probably them. A few days.
Works for me. Next week?
Yeah.
Next week?
That. It's a date.
It's a y'all date. Heard it. Next week is a date.
Okay. So. We're like, next week is the date. You just figure out which day, and it's the date.
We'll play a guessing game.
So we're going to start off with Whitney DuBois. She is the fourth victim. She is, or was, 26 years old when she passed. So I do want to remind y'all, there's so many key players in this case. There's so many different names, things to keep track of. So if you do end up getting confused or having any questions, feel free to reach out to us and ask us, for clarification, because we know that we start to talk and kind of veer off in different directions, and we don't want anybody to be confused about who is who or who did what. So feel free to reach out to us and let us know if you have any questions. So, Whitney DuBois, age 26. She was the younger sister of Mike DuBois, and remember we talked about him in the first part of this. He was the prescription pain medication dealer. So this is his younger sister, and like the other victims, she struggled with drug addiction and had a troubled background. Now, at 6 months old, she was abandoned by her birth mother and taken in by Ellery and Dorothy DuBois until she was two. When she was two, the courts ordered she be placed back with her birth mom.
Mistake.
Right. Whitney was physically and sexually abused by several of her mother's boyfriends for years. She was eventually officially adopted by the DuBois family, and in her late teens, she developed a crack cocaine habit with her boyfriend. He was a drug dealer named Alvin Bootsy Lewis. So, and I do want to say one thing real quick. These women were all prostitutes. That they're still people. So, right. You know, we want to make sure that we let that be known that, yes, they were prostitutes, but what they did with their life doesn't mean that they deserved what they got.
Nope.
So just throwing that out there again real quick. So her and her boyfriend loved each other but were always fighting. And Bootsy couldn't stay out of jail, so she constantly felt lonely.
Damn it, Bootsy.
I know. Always damn it. Always in the goddamn jail. So in...
Sorry. You said GD, it made me think of cowboy boots, Bootsy.
How?
And, you know, I don't know. I'm broken.
Good Lord. Cowboy boots.
What? Rodeo canceled. Corona.
But not
it's Bootsy. All running together.
Oh, Bootsy.
Bootsy. Boots. Duh. Cowboy boots. Bootsy.
That makes sense now.
All right. It all came together. Carry on. So, couldn't stay out of jail.
And just couldn't stay out the fucking jail.
You're welcome.
In 1996, she became pregnant and gave birth to a baby girl that they named Beyonce.
Yes!
In November 1996. After her daughter was born, she still struggled with drugs, but in 2006, she hit rock bottom when her dad passed away. Early in the day, on May 11, 2007, she stopped at Mike's house for drugs and somewhere to stay, but since she was always stealing and couldn't be trusted, she and Mike started to argue because he did not want her to stay. When she left, she headed to none other than
Frankie Richard's
house. Her grandma noticed when she left that all of her medicine was missing from her purse. So damn. Basically, Whitney stole all of her grandma's medication before she left her house, which kind of, you know, goes hand in hand with where she's headed and whose younger sister she is, because her older brother is none other than the prescription pain dealer. So kind of, I don't know, that hand wouldn't run in the family because they're not technically blood, but, you know, what you see is
what you
learn.
Yes.
So when she left, she headed to Frankie Richard's. Her stay at Frankie's did not last because they got into an argument and she ended up taking off. Around 7:30 a.m. on May 12th, Jamie Trahan, who was a close friend of Frankie, discovered a body at an intersection on the outskirts of Jennings. It was Whitney. Now, if you remember from part one, it had kind of started off as the bodies being found in hidden, locations. I want to say that she was the first one who was kind of actually like out in the open.
Yeah, like he was getting braver.
Like they were getting braver, whoever it was. Because
right. Remember, we still don't know.
We don't know who it was. We don't know if it was more than one person, which we think it is. We think it's kind of like a group of people who just do fucked up shit. A group of
good people, bad people. I don't want to say good people, but people who are supposed to be good people.
Right. Who have power and authority.
Thank you for clarifying that for me.
And just feel like they can do whatever they want, apparently.
Kind of like the jackass on the news right now.
Who did I miss?
With Floyd. The cop in...
Oh, yeah. Yes. Okay, that's a whole mm-hmm. different... I'm like, oh, shit.
Sorry.
So...
Squirrel.
Right. I'm like, oh, sorry. Shit. Sorry, that's sorry. A whole different rabbit hole. The area was deserted and surrounded by soybean and rice fields and shallow crawfish ponds, but he told investigators that he spotted the body from a half mile away. So, yes, it was kind of in a disclosed area, but she was in the middle of the road. So, basically, that's yeah. kind of them getting braver, or whoever did it wasn't worried about them getting finding caught. Her, getting caught, right. however that goes.
Kind of taunting, I would
right.
think.
You know, like look what I can do. So, now what? What right. are you going to do? It made people wonder if he was actively searching for Whitney or if he had been really driving on Highway 102 and knew where the body had been dumped. Because remember, this is an associate of Frankie Richard. And a lot of people have speculated that he had
something to do with all of them
and their death.
Do I, and I believe
you. Me, and I do.
I believe the rest of you will after listening to this.
Right. So when she was found, she was completely naked except for two elastic bands, one brown and one white, hanging from her wrist. Whitney had a high level of alcohol and drugs, so cocaine and Xanax, in her system. And her cause of death was undetermined. Huh, imagine
how,
that.
How, what, huh?
Undetermined.
Yeah, how does that, with, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was noted that she had non-specific bruises on her lower body. And if you remember before, the last victim, I think she had, like, the jaw of an alligator or a crocodile, like, bruising on her body. This is undetermined. Or, I'm sorry, non-specific. So that's kind of something to think about, too. A witness told investigators that on the night of May 11, 2007, he and Jamie Trahan, along with another woman, partied at the Budget Inn. And y'all remember this is like the Boudreaux Inn, the mm-hmm. drug and prostitution, you know, playhouses. So that evening, Trahan said he left and didn't tell anybody where he was going. Hours later, he returned to the inn around 5:15 a.m. He said that they then drove from the inn to the outskirts of Jennings, and when they turned the corner, the witness said that Whitney was in the road. Mind you, this is hours, before he called 911. Let me just tell y'all that real what? Quick. Hours.
There was an S at the end of that, right? Hours. Maybe it was Z?
Yes.
Gotcha.
At this point, yes, because that's ridiculous. So. So he told Trahan that there was a body in the road, and Trahan tried to convince him that it was just a deer and refused to pull over. Instead, they returned back to the Budget Inn, and then Trahan drove back to that spot she was dumped, and that's when he called 911.
Okay, look. Avid deer hunter, family deer hunters. If I'm driving down the road and I see what I think is a dead deer, or even uncertain if it's a dead deer, I'm pulling over to see what the hell it is.
I can't say because, you know.
Because you're not a deer hunter.
I'm not.
I get it. But backwoods, Louisiana, they're pulling over. We just want to see what's in the.
Right. Like, I want to see.
We're nosy. We're nosy.
I mean, I'm nosy, but, you know.
And.
But yeah, nobody pulled over. Nobody did anything. He ended up going back. And hours later. And then that's when he called 911.
Like, even...
I'm just
like... I can't. Like, people... Have you seen the thing? I think I actually heard it on one of our other fellow podcasters, Morbid, I think is the website, mm-hmm. or their Facebook.
Yeah.
Where that guy was literally, like, laying on the side of the road, playing dead so people would pull over.
Mm-hmm.
Because who's going to pull over for an actual hitchhiker?
Right.
Nobody.
But if you look like you're dead, there might be a nice person.
Right. To see what's going on.
Or my foot, or my kick you, or something.
I'm pulling over. Nope, not this guy.
Mm-mm.
Idiot.
So, or murderer. Right. Either. Because you know who he was a buddy with?
Frankie Richard?
Yep. So, get this. He then went to see Frankie Richard, who knew the Du Bois family. So he took Trahan to their home to, I'm going to put this in quotations, hopefully give them answers, end quote. Instead, he offered them $2,500 for her funeral, for Whitney's funeral.
What?
Which raised more suspicion. Who are you? Who are you to our daughter or sister, cousin, whoever, for you to offer $2,500.
Like, can I offer $2,500 for my own family members?
That's even rough to do.
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, because...
So, it's like, what were you trying to do? Did you finally... Did you have some guilt? Mm. Were you trying to pay off your guilt?
You thought that would take a suspicion away from you by offering to...
I'm just looking at you harder because ain't nobody got that kind of money that I know laying around that you can just throw it at.
Especially not...
some stranger's funeral.
No.
So, yeah, he offered them that money for her funeral. And like I said, it raised more suspicion, which it should. In 2009, the witness and Frankie were in the same drug rehab program. And the witness said that Frankie confessed to killing Whitney and two other girls. Police did not follow any of these leads. I wonder why. So.
I'm like nodding my head yes, like really hard over here, like y'all can hear me doing this.
Because they're part of it. So, like I said, they did not follow any of the leads. It was also said by witnesses that Frankie had a 55-gallon barrel filled with formaldehyde behind his mom's house.
How do you get that?
Why? No, no, no. Not even how, because there's you can get...
I jumped to the... Okay, let's start from the...
No. I'm past that. I didn't ran past that.
But why?
Why? Because you can get all kinds of shit. Like, it's...
Can you... Is that the drug you can get high off of?
Formaldehyde?
No.
No, that's they do that's, put that in the bodies of at the funeral home, I think.
Is that what they... Why do I even have questions for that? Never mind. Carry on.
I don't know, but he had a whole 55-gallon barrel, and that's not normal behavior.
Yeah, you're not getting high off of 55 gallons of that, even if that's...
You're throwing some bodies in there.
Yeah, you're doing something. Yeah.
So...
I even tried to have his back there for a second.
No.
Didn't work out. Nope.
So, he denied having a barrel and said the witnesses were just talking shit. But he did admit to the task force investigators that him and Michael Prudhomme, and I probably butchered that.
That sounds good.
But it sounds cute, so Prudhomme, has... they purchased embalming fluid from a nearby funeral home.
That's what I was thinking Embalming fluid. That's what I was thinking of.
What normal person needs embalming fluid?
Why can a normal person purchase that, period? Why is that a thing that you can do?
Well, I feel like in that city, him being who he was and people being scared of him, they're going to be able to hear, have whatever
you want.
Don't
you have to, like, sign something for that? Like, I don't know. I work a lot of death on accounts.
But
apparently
you don't
that's my
them,
thing now. So, like, I see a lot of death certificates. And I feel like people have to sign for shit like that.
I don't know.
Can you tell I'm bitter about the death on the couch?
Yeah, I am a little bit.
I'm bringing it up in my damn podcast. You. That's terrible. Anywho.
So.
2 days after.
2 days after Whitney's body was found, a woman, also a sex worker, by the name of Elizabeth Dawn Clemens, said that Frankie and his associate, Eugene Dog Ivory, they both raped her. She said that Frankie made the statement, "If you tell anyone, bitch, you will end up like the others." Hmm. She took that threat as a clear reference to the four murdered women. She called the cops, and she was tested at the hospital where they did find traces of Dog's DNA.
Nickname Dog, not
right,
actual.
Not actual.
Yeah, oops. Just to clarify. Because that could be confusing.
Yeah, so Eugene Dog, his DNA. So Frankie and Dog were both charged with rape. Frankie has always denied assaulting Elizabeth Clemens. At this point, Frankie's business began to slow down, and on May 16, 2007, a warrant was issued for his arrest for the second-degree murder charge and the killing of Kristen Gary Lopez. And you remember, she was our third victim. She was the 21-year-old, the youngest at this point. His niece, Hannah Connor, also had a warrant for her arrest issued that same day for the same reason. The both of them were shocked and both insisted that they had nothing to do with her murder. And I will say that I did watch a documentary and they both still to this day deny having anything to do with her murder. So in a second interview with Tracy Chasson, I guess that's how you say that, she told investigators that one night they were all riding around, including another sex worker named Connie Seiler, going to purchase drugs. Frankie was angry that Kristen stole from him, so he pulled her out of the truck and beat her severely. Mm. Tracy said that Hannah Connor then held Kristen underwater in a canal until she was lifeless. And notice I kind of...
Canal?
Yeah, canal, because that's kind of familiar with another body that was found.
There's a few of them, right?
Two.
Two? Okay, few is three, two, you know,
so, couple. Yeah, so Frankie has said that he was told Connie Seiler and Tracy Chasson are the ones who set Kristen up. That Tracy had a drug debt she couldn't pay, and the drug dealers made Tracy hold Kristen underwater to consider the debt paid. There are sources that say that Kristen, Frankie, his brother Billy, and Tracy were in Billy's camper high on crack, and Frankie demanded that Kristen give him a blowjob. When she refused, Frankie became angry and forced Tracy to hold Kristen's head down in a bucket of water where she suffocated. This story is different from the one that Tracy told law enforcement.
Was Tracy her girlfriend?
No. Is this... Just good friend.
Okay, no.
Yeah, she was just another drug-addicted prostitute who kind of was in the circle with everybody else. But the story is different than the one that Tracy told law enforcement. Tracy's inconsistent statements on the murder and the fact that she stopped cooperating with investigators in late May 2007... caused the second-degree murder case to collapse. The charges were dropped, and so were Tracy's charges. So basically, she did not comply. She did not, you know, keep helping law enforcement. So her charges were just dropped. Fuck it.
That makes sense. Bye. Right? Just.
In the summer of 2007, Elizabeth Clemens walked into the DA's office and dropped the charges against Frankie Richard and Dog. So they are now free from that crime as well at this point. It's intimidation. That's all it is. Between right. law enforcement intimidation die and or, Frankie Richard, right. like, nobody wants to fight. Like, nobody no. wants... Nobody, nobody thinks else wants worth to die. It. Right.
Nobody wants to die.
That's, is yeah, that's pretty
basically
much
what they're thinking.
So, that was Winnie DuBois. And I just can't, like, all those... Everything just... Like, they've got evidence.
Like, it's all there.
They don't want to go forward with it, so... Our next victim was Laconia Muggy Brown, and y'all may remember her from the first part. She was a hot, shitty mess.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all of the Jeff Davis eight, Muggy was probably the most fearful of her fate. She told friends and family how traumatized she was after witnessing the murder of Ernestine Patterson in 2005. So let's say 2005, Ernestine Patterson was murdered. In the spring of 2008, Muggy admitted to her older sister that she was working with a cop on a murder case, and that the cop said he would give her $500 to tell what happened.
And to somebody like that.
That's a lot of money.
That's into drugs and...
You're going to do whatever you
right.
want
them $500 to do. Is a lot of money.
Right. She was not clear on what case she was working on. Apparently, she couldn't tell... You know, anybody whose case it was. But Muggy's upbringing was very similar to the other women. Her mother went to prison when she was a baby. She was raised by her grandmother, Bessie. She was the mother to a three-year-old son. She was a single mom and was unsure who had fathered him. So that's enough stress within itself.
Ugh.
Her family said they did not realize how dangerous Muggy's associates were. On May 24, 2008, Muggy's boyfriend, Stymie, was partying at Budget Inn when Irvin, quotation mark, Big Mac, like what? Edwards, kicked in the door, like, why? Why would you do that? That's not cute.
Oh, you're at the, first of all, Budget Inn.
Yeah,
the
you're at the Budget Inn.
And mm-hmm. your nickname's Big Mac. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Go is it next to McDonald's? Self?
I don't know, but now I'm hungry. Thanks for that. I know where I'll be stopping.
I got chicken pot pies.
So he... Edwards kicked in the door, furious because he had just been robbed of $3,000. Stymie told him Muggy had done it, and Big Mac vowed to hunt her down. Let me rewind myself. Stymie told him that Muggy had done it. Stymie is Muggy's boyfriend. What the fuck kind of boyfriend are you?
A shitty one.
So, when Muggy found this out, she told a friend, "I feel like I got death on me." She told this person that if anyone kills her, it would be Stymie. For most of May 2008, Muggy's presence was a ghost. They said she was withdrawn, distracted, and unhappy. On Monday, May 26, she showed up to the family reunion and approached her grandmother, Bessie. She got on her knees and told her grandma that she loved her and there wasn't anything she wouldn't do for her or her son, Jaheim. And that's rough because, you know, that's at that point, she knows, like, her fate. Like, you just know that when she goes and does that, she knows what's going to happen to her. A little while later, she packed a red bag with clothing and told her grandma she was going to do laundry, which was odd because they had a washer. That was cute, huh? A washer and dryer at their home. On May 27th, she made a call to her grandmother to let her know that she was okay, and she asked that Bessie did not tell Stymie she had called. It turns out Maggie had purchased a bus ticket to Washington, where one of her brothers lived, and that day she got into the truck with Tracy Chasson and Ricardo Tiger Williams. That was the last time she was seen alive. Nobody knows for sure what happened to her, but there's a theory due to witness interviews and reports related to the case. It was said that Muggy got into a fight with Tiger, and then he slashed her throat several times with a knife.
Is everybody murderers?
Pretty much, because they know they can get away with it.
But, we may not be there yet, but is there a chance that she's maybe just hiding to keep herself safe and her family safe? Or did we find her? Oh. Mm-hmm. Keep reading, Samantha. Yeah. Keep reading.
So, when he did that, he called Big Mac, remember, who had been looking for her because Stymie told him that stole from him. So he called Big Mac, who had been looking for her, so he could dump her body. Big Mac discarded her body off the side of a deserted stretch of East Rocka Road on the border of the Jennings city limits. No one, including Stymie, has ever been charged in her murder. Another witness said that Tyson Mouton, an associate of Frankie Richard, helped Big Mac dispose of her body. They said that as she lay dead on the road, another South Jennings sex worker poured bleach on her body to try to destroy physical evidence. When she was found, she was fully clothed, unlike the other victims. She had multiple incision wounds to the head, the neck, and three cuts behind her right ear, and approximately 7 cuts across the front of her neck.
So this one was different.
Yeah, she this had more incisions. It was like more of a...
This was more of a person pissed off, personal, and then they just call Mr. Frankie Richard.
To send someone to dispose of her body. Got possible
experience.
Right. So you see how he kind of comes... He's like the center of chaos. Him.
Is he dead yet?
No, I don't think so.
Damn it.
Because he was on one of the
show. It was just like, a few years ago they recorded it. Maybe he's dead now. We should Google that.
I don't know. We'll Google it later.
We'll Google it. Oh, by episode 3, you'll know if you haven't Googled it by now.
So, unlike the other victims, like we said, she was fully clothed. She had multiple incisions. She was discovered by Michael Janis, a police lieutenant. Her family was not allowed to view the body.
What the actual fuck? Carry on.
So... Yeah, they weren't allowed to view her body, I guess, because of the extent of her injuries. I don't know if they did that as, like, a courtesy.
Yeah, but usually they make you somebody identify a body. That's just how it works. So.
That does kind of bring in question, but apparently she really is, maybe somebody who knew her. Or I don't know. So,
We don't think for a second, not to cut you off, we don't think for a second that police are trying to protect or have feelings for anybody's emotions in this town.
Because they're all corrupt as they come.
Assholes.
So, my opinion too. Just before her funeral, the coroner, Richard DuPont, told her family that he has suspected law enforcement was involved with her murder. Suspected can't prove, but, you know, from what we've heard so far, I agree.
Wow. I'm surprised that somebody actually had the balls to come forward and say something like that.
But, you know, let's see.
Power to him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that sounded scary.
So, the next victim, Crystal Zeno. And I don't know why this is important, but it was in the book that I read, and for some reason it's the first sentence. Not that it matters. But they did want to make a point for some reason that Crystal was larger than the other women. at 5'11 and 170 pounds, but she had a trusting demeanor and Christian background and seemed oblivious to the dangers posed by Frankie Richard. Crystal struggled with a prescription drug addiction and counted on minimum wage jobs for a paycheck. She battled severe mental illness, and at the age of 12, she was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
That's so terrible.
Her mother struggled to get her treatment for years, but by the age of 15, she felt so alienated that she ran away from home and did not return until 3 years later.
16, 17, 18, 19.
She was 18. Ma'am, where did you go? And did they stop looking for you?
Like,
did they even care? I'm going to be honest. I did not check to see if, like, they had put out a missing person or anything like that. I kind of want to say that they were just like, fuck it. And she was 15 at the time. But don't quote me because I did not look into it.
I looked.
Don't know for sure if they did report her as a missing or a runaway or however they do that at that age. But just know she did not return home until 3 years later. In her 20s, she ended up having sex with Roxanne Alexander's boyfriend, which caused her to feel the wrath of Roxanne and forced her to fend for herself. Now, y'all remember Roxanne is the grandma prostitute, I'm going to say. That's the first thing that came to my head.
Hey, to each their own.
So she is
you go, grandma.
Older prostitute. That these women, like, lived with and went to for advice. So, that's a mama prostitute, y'all.
You ain't lying.
So,
Nanny.
Roxanne admitted. Not Nanny.
Sorry.
She admitted that she beat Crystal up and told her to stay away from her house. Crystal grew tired of bouncing from house to house, and she ended up moving into the home of a strange and abusive client. She did not last there very long, and by the summer of 2008, she had developed a severe crack addiction. In July 2008, Crystal Zeno and Brittany Gary, who happened to be Kristen Gary Lopez's cousin, you know, they're all kind of intertwined in one big old web of relation somehow. They were recruited by a client to have group sex at a home in Andrus Cove, an abandoned area near Jennings.
Yuck.
When they arrived, the client wanted the two women to have sex with each other. They refused, and to keep the client happy, they just took turns having sex with him. When it was over, Brittany left in tears, and the next day, the wife of the client gave Crystal two black eyes.
Damn.
She was like, fuck y'all, don't come back, fuck my husband, no more, bro.
We're supposed to bang each other,
bye.
Not him. Whoops.
So yeah, Crystal got beat up.
You know?
At the end of July 2008, she was attacked with a metal pipe after he and a drunk Crystal got into an argument. This attack led Crystal to seek refuge with Frankie Richard.
Wrong idea.
So, at the end of August, she disappeared. Again, nobody is exactly sure what happened. On August 23rd, 2008, Crystal celebrated her close friend and roommate's 17th birthday, Brittany Gary, at South Andrew Street. 17. So, just, you know, some foreshadowing. Brittany Gary was the 7th victim. She was killed after Crystal. In the days after the birthday celebration, though, Crystal partied at Billy Connor's trailer. And remember, Billy Connor is Frankie Richard's brother. And she stayed with a client on Jefferson Street. On August 29th, Crystal was with John at the Budget Inn.
Budget Inn.
There you go again.
So, don't ever stay at the Budget Inn.
Or the Boudreaux.
Or the Boudreaux.
Are still in existence.
Just saying.
Unless you want to prostitute.
There's actually a Budget Inn down the road for me, but, you know.
Is there really?
I think it's by the McDonald's, actually.
I'm going to have to go look when I get my Big Mac. So, around 5 p.m. that day, she left the motel on foot and headed to the Phillips 66 gas station. This gas station was about a 3-mile walk from the Budget Inn. When she reached the gas station, she used a payphone to call Warden Terry Guillory. Nobody is sure what she told him, but this is the last time she was seen alive. So the last time she was seen alive, she was on the phone with Warden Terry Guillory.
Put 2 and 2 plus
3 plus 7.
Frankie Richard and
Frankie Richard Parrish. And his friends squared. Yes. When she left the gas station, she was picked up by a group of Frankie Richard's hands-on men in a white truck. The theory is that once she got into the truck, they drove her deep into the country, and then they took her into the woods and strangled her. Her killers did not realize they weren't alone that night.
Whoops.
When they returned to the truck, they ran into Russell Carrier, a 43-year-old man who was walking by. Carrier didn't reside in Jennings, but he was often in Jeff Davis Parish visiting his sister, Barb Ann Des Hotel. Y'all remember her from Victim 1, that was Loretta Lewis's close friend. He later confessed to his family that he recognized all of the men. He would do mechanical work for the men, and they would pay him in crack. Crack?
How about that?
Crack, so, that's great. Crack.
In the words of, not as great, in the words of Dave Chappelle, my bad, carry on.
So he told local law enforcement that he'd seen Eugene Dog, not Dog again, Ivory, Tyson Mouton, and Ricardo Tiger Williams.
Dog, Tiger.
Tyson.
Sorry.
Killers.
Williams.
Etc.
Carry on.
There is no evidence that local law enforcement, the sheriff's office, the DA's office, or the task force acted on Carrier's tip.
Hmm.
So basically,
go figure.
Nothing ever fucking happened
this
with those
tips. This is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 12, in the words of Liana, 14, 19.
Squared times 3.
Exactly.
So on September 11, 2008, nearly 2 weeks after her disappearance, a group of hunters discovered Crystal's naked body in a levee near a dry irrigation canal. Her body was nearly skeletal. In one crime scene photo, she lies frozen in terror with her left arm extended far past her body like she's reaching for help. And that gives me chills because, I mean, like, imagine being in fear for your life and trying to reach for help and that's how you're found.
I can't. I cannot.
Terry Guillory traveled to the Zeno home to let them know that Crystal's body had been found. He told them, "I didn't kill her, but I know that it's her." Her mother asked him how he was able to identify her since she was so badly decomposed, and Guillory said, "There's a tattoo on an intimate part of her body."
Hmm.
The only way to know this is if he would have had sex with her before. Then he got silent and left. Her corpse was so badly decomposed, it took nearly 2 months for officials to confirm her identity.
Hmm. How about that, Guillory?
Yeah, Guillory.
How about
just
that?
In the mix.
Just
with Frankie Richard and all his homeboys.
And, you know, sheriff's office and...
Yeah, that's a big old shitty mess. So, yeah, those were our next three victims. In our next episode, part 3 and final, we will do our next two, who are Brittany Gary and Nicole Guillory. But yeah, that
Guillory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gary, yeah. Brittany Gary. That was a good one too.
That one was a little
that was sad.
Yeah.
I mean, no more sad than the rest of them. But
right.
Still, like it's like, yeah, you'll we'll find out next time. So. That's going to be it.
There you are.
There you are, part 2.
You're welcome.
Jeff Davis 8.
8 weeks later.
8 million hours.
I keep going off of 8 weeks because I heard somebody say 8 weeks the other day. Was it Eric in the meeting today? Maybe.
I don't pay.
We had a meeting today. I know. Stop. Don't say that out loud.
Okay. So, yeah. That's it.
8 weeks.
So, until next time, and we promise it will not be another 2 months.
It will be next week.
It will be next week.
I just have to drag her over to my house.
Yeah.
Excuse my children.
So, yeah.
Child.
Follow us on Instagram at Taste of True Crime Podcast. Make sure you add us on Facebook. We have a page and we have a group. They're both called Taste of True Crime Podcast. Make sure you leave us a review, share us with your friends, and until next time. Bye, guys.
Bye.